Welcome back to the Hydrogen Bar and welcome to your podcast about the exciting world of hydrogen, fuel cells, and everything that has to do with that. I'm very happy to say hello to my colleague Johannes once again. Hello, Johannes.
Hello, Martin.
And we are very excited and happy to say hello to Hack Hayward.
Hello, hello, everybody.
Hello, Hack. Yeah, it's really great that you found the time to join us here in our short series about the developments in the hydrogen world in China and also around the world. We're really happy that you found the time to come to our bar, basically.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for inviting me. I understand that you're quite well known with your German version. So, and you've just now started the English version. So it's quite an honor to be invited.
Oh, thank you very much for coming on the podcast once again. I think it's fair to say that most of our listeners might not instantly know you or might not exactly know who you are. Or if you are okay with it, would you mind introducing yourself in a few sentences, who you are, where you come from, what you do?
And my favorite drink, because it's the hydrogen bar, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, just kidding. Oh, well.
You always have to drink when we say hi, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. Good to know. Well, not really much interesting about me. I've just had some kind of out of the ordinary experiences. I attended university in China, in the People's Republic of China, where I am right now. I went to the Dalian University of Technology. That's Dalian Ligong Dashui in Chinese. And I studied methanol reforming, hydrogen. Oh, I got to drink something. Just kidding. Hydrogen generation technology. And
very good.
After that, I worked in control software in Zhongguancun in Beijing from 2010 to 2012. At the time, Zhongguancun was really the Wild West of software development for machinery control software. From 2012 to 2013, I worked as a consultant for Ballard, a well-known Canadian fuel cell company working on methanol reforming hydrogen generators. In 2014, I joined my Chinese friend, also from Ballard, as commercial director for his small company based in Yangzhou in China. In 2018, I was encouraged to become a consultant by my friend. And so my business from 2018 on is to develop strategic relationships for European fuel cell and hydrogen companies here in China.
Okay, yeah. So thank you very much. If I'm not mistaken, you are not Chinese born, right?
Yes. I'm one
kind
of the rare.
Immigrated to China.
Yes, I'm one of the rare fluent Chinese speakers who is not ethnically Chinese. I learned Chinese later in life. It was my third language after English and Spanish, and I've put a lot of time into it. And the written language is a bit of a hobby of mine. Probably shouldn't get into that here. We'd be talking for hours. But suffice to say that I enjoy the Chinese language, and I think it's intellectually challenging. And I enjoy the opportunity to use Chinese in my professional life, in my business.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's always embarrassing when I meet people like you who master Chinese, and I am stuck with my few words that just get me along in the taxi ride and in some restaurants. But
oh no,
there
it's
really
not for everybody.
I have to say I'm very impressed by your Chinese skills, and I'm also super impressed by your experience where you basically joined the hydrogen industry in China in its earliest beginnings, basically, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes up and down, I think. People would say that there has been interest in fuel cell technology since the Chinese space program started. And I think that the idea of one particular application of fuel cells that is commonly discussed is fuel cell electric vehicles, FCEVs. And there have been pilot projects for FCEVs as early as the 2008 Beijing Olympics. As a matter of fact, the system architecture for the FCEVs in the 2008 Olympics, the 2010 Shanghai World Expo, the 2012 Shenzhen Universiade, and recently, the system architecture is all very similar. What differs is the cost. The costs are dropping quite a lot. A fuel cell electric vehicle would have been in the tens of millions of RMB in 2008, whereas today it's a fuel cell electric vehicle, 10.5 meter bus can be between 2 and 3 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Can you explain or tell us what was the reason for you to kind of get into the hydrogen business in the first place? Have you been interested in hydrogen from your time at university, or where did this decision come from?
Well, yeah, so I've been interested originally in mathematics and then into chemical engineering, and I was focused on the hydrogen generation aspect, so natural gas reforming, methanol reforming, ammonia cracking, these concepts. So I mentioned earlier that my friend and I returned to China. He's ethnically Chinese, and we and he started this company, and I joined his company a little while later. And his the original product of that company was a small-scale hydrogen generator. It was not a fuel cell. So the idea was that the generator would be paired with a fuel cell to provide an on-site source of hydrogen, making hydrogen an intermediate fuel as opposed to a fuel that needs to be transported vast distances. It's something we're still talking about today. On the one hand, the benefits of hydrogen, whether used in a fuel cell because it produces only water, or used in a hydrogen combustion engine where it produces a small amount of, say, oxides, or you have to condition against laminar burning, for example, but it still works, right? That's on the one hand, hydrogen has all these great aspects to it. And on the other hand, it has a relatively low volumetric energy density. And so you need to find a way to bottle a lot of it up. And I think that's where a lot of startups have been focused on in the past few years in China. So you get liquid organic hydrogen compounds, LOHC. You get storing hydrogen in using forms of magnesium. You get liquid hydrogen and various levels of compression, 350 bars, 700 bars. So, you know, the source of hydrogen is a real important issue, and it may have been a fundamental issue for the fuel cell industry until the issue was solved by really just transporting hydrogen at 350 bar. And subsidizing the cost of hydrogen. So I originally got into the industry from that perspective. I was on the hydrogen generation side, not on the hydrogen usage side.
I see. Right.
So with all the experience that you made now, you said you saw basically the price dropping from tens of millions of RMB to only a couple of million RMB for such a fuel cell bus. How would you describe this development that you witnessed in this hydrogen market here?
Well, I think it is, unfortunately, it's nothing very interesting. It's just a matter of scale. Some researchers have talked about the idea of getting rid of precious metals in the membranes that make fuel cells work. A membrane that does not use platinum, for example, but uses some other cheaper metal. But really, platinum is readily available, though it is expensive. And volume production has lowered the cost of fuel cells anyways. Mm-hmm. So I think you see that with cobalt in batteries, platinum in fuel cells. You just can't do without it. And yet there's enough of it around that just the sheer volume has allowed costs to fall. I think there's also a feedback loop with government policy. The government policy can be spread across the ecosystem in different ways. Like I mentioned earlier, there's supporting hydrogen, the fuel itself. There's providing subsidies to buyers of fuel cell vehicles. There is also requirements on buying fuel cell vehicles, so requiring city governments to buy fuel cell vehicles, setting targets, rollout targets, so to speak. So I guess the falling costs of fuel cells in China should not deter technology companies overseas from entering the Chinese market for fear of being unable to compete on price. The reason is because these prices are arbitrary. The prices are being depressed in a small part because of large volume production, say from companies like Sinosynergy in Yunfu, or companies producing large amounts of membranes like Sino Haiki in Guangzhou, or you know, companies producing large amounts of buses. But it's not so much the volume production that is depressing prices. It is this feedback loop of government policy. So foreign companies should take heart in the fact that if they're able to insert themselves into this feedback loop by providing technology that is licensed or engineering services or some sort of what we call a tech transfer deal, then they can certainly get a piece of the pie.
I see. Yeah. That would have been at least a part of my next question, actually.
I've been talking too much.
No problem at all. But would you say that that these price reductions that you have just talked about, or these economies of scale that you have talked about, already make a competitive industry, or is it still mainly kind of dependent on subsidiaries and funding? Have we already reached a phase where the hydrogen industry in China is cost competitive, or is this still on its way to competitiveness and it still is dependent on funding?
Well, I think it's on its way to competitiveness, and that has something to do with China's natural resources. China has lots of coal, and indeed produces quite a lot of hydrogen from the coke oven gas or coal off gas. The cost of that hydrogen is still high, though. It's generally accepted in the industry here that the cost of hydrogen per kilogram needs to fall below 40 RMB per kilogram to be competitive. And I think the ultimate price goal should be 20 RMB. And I think that while, just to speak on fuel cell electric vehicles, while they are not competitive yet, it's really a question of infrastructure rollout. The availability of hydrogen fueling stations, or really lack of, that is preventing their speedy rollout of more FCV fleets. Another example too is, since much carbon fuels need to be imported into China, these carbon fuels are expensive, and in some cases, like in Shanghai, petrol is actually subsidized. So I think that while hydrogen makes a lot of sense for a place like China, because China is also very big, and the commercialization is going to require a longer rollout period. That being said, some trunk roads and main arteries of the transportation system have been identified. For example, in the two big cities, Guangzhou and Shanghai, these cities have satellite cities surrounding them. Mm-hmm. And what you see in the industry here is the FCV fleet operators will base their fleets in the smaller cities where there might be cheaper sources of hydrogen gas, and right. then operate mm-hmm. the vehicles in the big cities during the day and then drive them back. So yeah. a friend of mine operates a fleet out of Kunshan, which is northwest of Shanghai. He drives into Shanghai to deliver, he leases his fleet to people like Xunfeng or Jingdong, and then they deliver their goods with the leased vehicles. And my friend's company takes care of the hydrogen refueling since there are a few stations in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Another example mm-hmm. would be stations in Foshan, refueling in Foshan, and then driving into Guangzhou, driving east into Guangzhou.
Right. Yeah. So your friend picks up the cars in the evening and brings them back to his company and refuels them there? Or how is this organized?
Oh, no. So the user rents the vehicle, which comes fully filled, and then returns the vehicle at the end of the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these, like, just for our listeners outside of China, Jingdong, for example, and these users are delivery companies, right? Like, they basically it's like UPS and DHL, just for the local market here.
Ah, I see.
And so they basically use these probably small trucks, I guess, or like small delivery vehicles to deliver the packages and bring them to the customers.
And these are 4.5 ton vehicles. So that qualifies as light, light truck, which means mm-hmm. they can enter many city limits. As you all probably know, in Shanghai, I know that Johannes lives in Shanghai, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you drive, you know, there's limitations on your license plate mm-hmm. and like even numbers, odd numbers. But then if you're mm-hmm. driving an outside of Shanghai delivery truck, you can't get on elevated expressways at certain times. So there's lots of mm-hmm. restrictions. We also see those restrictions when we're trying to transport tube trailers full of mm-hmm. hydrogen. For example, crossing the Humen Bridge, which is the first bridge as you head up. Well, if you count the giant bridge, the new one, I guess that's the first bridge. But as you head up the Pearl River towards Guangzhou, the first big bridge you get is Humen Bridge. Mm-hmm. And you can't drive tube trailers over that. So mm-hmm. there's lots of restrictions on transportation. There's actually mm-hmm. a joke we say. We have a joke in the Shenzhen Hydrogen and Fuel Cell Association. Yes, there is such a thing, if you're wondering. We have about 40 members. And the joke is Shenzhen has the largest number of fuel cell vehicles in China, except they're not in Shenzhen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So the joke is they have Shenzhen license plates because at the time the Shenzhen government was giving a subsidy for these vehicles. So three unlucky companies decided to try and be the early bird here and paid a bunch of money for these fuel cell electric vehicle delivery fleets and discovered that the Shenzhen city government says we will not allow any gases within city limits. Okay. So there's no hydrogen refueling station. So they drove all these vehicles over to Zhongshan and other parts in Guangdong province. So that's the joke. In Shenzhen, we have the largest number of fuel cell vehicles, except they're not in Shenzhen.
And do you have a hydrogen refueling station finally, or is there still no refueling station?
We got my friend up north is associated with an Australian company called Kohodo, mm-hmm. strange name, that is an electrolyzer company, and he has gotten a permit to build one.
All right.
Okay. I think he's in. I think he's either in Bao'an or Longhua up north. And but aside from him, I think there are two other organizations that have permits, but I don't think anybody's started work yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is there's actually these restricted environments are actually better suited for these alternative fuel vehicles. For example, in Shenzhen, there is a large LNG receiving station called Yantiangang in eastern Shenzhen. This is before you get to the nuclear power station in Dapeng, if you just drive due east. And Yantiangang now has, I believe they have 10 FCV heavy-duty trucks, but they are being refueled locally at the port area, and they're only traveling in the port area. So that's a set location. They can radiate out from that port area. So I haven't actually been down there yet to see them, but I've seen a few pictures. So I guess that counts.
For sure. But what I was wondering is, these fleets, are they an commercially viable endeavor? Is it because then the subsidies, or is it more as a kind of tool for marketing in the end?
Well, really both. And the degree of influence that industrial policy has in China means that it's hard to make a clear-cut determination on what is commercially viable. So there are policy goals, feed-in tariffs, fuel subsidies, license plate subsidies. There's a whole. I've done it twice. It takes about a year and a half each time. There's a whole bunch of permits and you have to apply for, and relationships you have to build in order to get a fuel cell and in order to get a fleet of fuel cell electric vehicles operating in China. It it takes a lot of permits and relationship building.
I'm sure you also have some good insights into the Korean and the Japanese markets, especially hydrogen markets, maybe. Or at least some rough insights, I hope.
Not really, guys. I'm afraid to say. Well, what do you want to know?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, how do you estimate the industry in China when comparing it with the hydrogen industries, for example, in Japan or in Korea or even in Europe? Would you say that the Chinese hydrogen industry is more advanced, or is it some years behind, or is this is kind of differing
between this sectors? Well, my area of expertise is really within mainland China. But I have heard a few pieces of information. I know that the European post-pandemic recovery package includes a large amount of funds earmarked for hydrogen technologies. I've heard that.
Yes.
Whereas in China, that there is no such policy. The policy in China, on the other hand, is based on what's called a pilot cities cluster, or cities cluster program. And that's designed to have, it's designed to prevent overlap in the supply chain in certain areas. So groups of cities form this cluster and then divide up production of the fuel cell supply chain among the cities. So you would have a city doing, say, a membrane, and then a city doing fuel cell stack materials, and a city doing fuel cell systems, and a city doing applications like fuel cell electric ships, fuel cell electric vehicles, materials handling, fuel cell forklifts, right? But you would not want, say, two competing companies in the same city.
In the same city, and, okay.
Yeah, so that's the city clusters program. It's kind of, it's a throwback to planned economy.
And it's also originated from earlier times already. Like, in, as you said, in Europe, this was mainly a reaction on the corona situation and kind of a push to revamp the economy, whereas this hydrogen industry, I mean, I've heard about this already years ago in China, about the push by the government and this planned approach that China needs to develop an industry in this area, right? So basically this predates the corona situation already.
Oh yeah. I mean, we've been working on fuel cell electric vehicles since 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you think? Will this push up by the government will still go on for a couple of years, or will this end soon? This government's support in general, if you will.
Yeah, well, the city's city clusters program is relatively new, so I'm sure that program will continue for a while. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of publicity about using FCV buses for the Winter Olympics, which are scheduled for 2022. So I think for the next 2 years, there will be orders for the FCV industry, at least for the next 2 years.
Now, if you look into this whole spectrum, I see that here in China, there are many companies that you have basically never heard of outside of China, and that a lot of companies that you are familiar in kind of the Western world are still not really active here, or have maybe only some sales offices and so on. Do you see that this kind of separation between the two worlds as well?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, it's interesting that you make that observation. That is really, that's my business. my business is, in these, there's different water levels between these two rivers. And when you build when you cut a channel between the two rivers, there's going to be a lot of force when the water flows. So I'm trying to get the water flowing and then put a water wheel to have it turning and be making energy. So to use an extended metaphor there.
That's a nice metaphor, yeah.
So I think that there's yes. As a matter of fact, I think it's working better and better. The planned economy approach, whether in city clusters or just generally, the industry, the Chinese industrial chemical industry is very well organized, perhaps too well organized. Whereas I think perhaps in North America, at least, you would get a little bit of creative destruction, or perhaps some creative ideas, say, but in China, there are a few organizations, most of them based in Beijing, like industry associations or very influential scholars at the Chinese Academy of Sciences. And these folks will make a decision, an educated decision, and they're certainly very smart folks, but they will decide on the technology to be pursued, to be subsidized, and everything else either gets the chop or just is left to wither on the vine, so to speak.
Right. Yeah.
And an example would be a few years ago, the vice premier, a political leader in China, I think he's like the number two guy, Li Keqiang. This guy went to Japan and he went and visited Toyota and saw a Toyota Mirai, which is their FCV sedan. And he said, this is very nice. We should build this in China too. And so that means that the Toyota, the technology, the R&D direction that Toyota chose then became the accepted standard for China. So an example of that would be, okay, well, using flow fields as opposed to having the hydrogen and oxygen flowing in the same direction. Okay, well, there are pros and cons to that. There's also, well, okay, Toyota designed a fuel cell stack for a sedan, which isn't driven very often, a stack made of metallic plates. Okay, well, metallic plates have some advantages in terms of their energy density, for example, but they're hard to manufacture, hard to coat. And so then you get companies like, say, Elring Klinger or Nedstack or PowerCell. And these companies are then doing something different. And they come to China and they say, well, we have this fuel cell stack technology. And the buyer says, okay, yes, I know exactly how to buy fuel cell stacks. The closer you are to Toyota, the better.
Right.
And that's the only metric I use.
The easier it's
So,
for me.
And so and so if you're able to articulate why your slightly different technology is better for a certain application, like, well, my fuel cell is actually designed to be high temperature and run off of syngas. It's not designed for pure hydrogen. And you say, well, that applies. There are certain scenarios where that's what you need. You don't need the Toyota 110 kilowatt Mirai stack. And if you can articulate that and find those applications, then you can do business. So I think that there's this creative destruction in North America, in Europe, and maybe in other East Asian countries, where you get people coming up with all different kinds of fuel cell and flow battery technologies, different kinds of materials, different applications, and you do, you know, it's not black and white. You do see some of that in China. So, but still, I think that overall, a lot of people in China have unfortunately missed a lot of the new technology developments that are coming out of Europe, and that's a really good opportunity for European companies.
How is it like the acceptance of these foreign companies? Because I know this is kind of a sensitive field for China because they have this industrial policy that to basically develop also a leading industry here in China in this market. Would you say like it's easy to get access to these to the industry and sell there, or is it then that you're always just playing with the big guys in the end?
Well, a lot of Chinese businessmen would have you believe that China is some ancient, mysterious place with impenetrable language and culture. Wow. I'm sure the Germans say the same thing about Germany. And that as a foreigner, you will never be successful, so you should give up now. Well, I'll tell you, when you're negotiating, you know, when you're doing business, you know what you want. And if you know what the other guy wants, well, then it's easy because you know how to negotiate. And if you know what the other guy wants is dictated by the government in terms of industrial policy, well, then you know how to stage your technology transfer. You know what they really want. You can hold that back until last. Chinese companies will insist on getting some sort of pricing up front. And you just say, well, pricing, we all know that price is not the most important thing here. The most important thing is the maturity and maturity of the technology, and also local connections and willingness to invest and train people. That's the most important thing. So maybe I just do it a lot, and I get lots of the same questions, so I have set answers. But I would say there are some. I think there are some companies that are doing very well. I would say a company I used to work for, a hydrogen generator company called E1, based in the U.S., they're following a licensing strategy, not a production strategy, but a licensing strategy. And there's another company in Germany, Proton Motors.
Right.
Proton Motors is following a licensing strategy. So not just selling product. So I think there are also, with fuel cell system companies, unlike in China, some of these small foreign fuel cell system companies make the stack as well as the system. And with many of these companies, their core IP is usually, in terms of most important to least important, it's stack design, control software, and then system design. So they, when they do technology transfer agreements, they just start from the out and work their way in. They start with the system design, and then they do control software. And many of these companies, I've seen this twice now, they will set up a JV in China with a funding company to build the system and the control software. But then they will set up what's called a WFOE, a wholly owned foreign enterprise, to build their core IP. So they control that.
Since we are running a little bit out of time, we would like to interrupt our discussion at this point and we'll continue in the next week.
Exactly. Until then, you can visit our website on hydrogenbar.net. You can reach us there via the contact forms and the typical channels that are existing. And one more thing, we have set up a survey form on our website where we ask you about your opinion if we should continue with more English episodes, with only English episodes, having it mixed, or then going back to completely German. Let us please know your feedback so we can then plan our next interviews. And until then, we hope you have a good time and a lot of hydrogen news that are pushing our moods.
And we hope you will be tuning in for the next episode next week once again. Until then, we say goodbye.
Goodbye.